Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome. I am here today with a very special guest. Mark Willis is the former CEO of Keller Williams Realty International and founder of the Willis Family Foundation and Mark Willis Leadership. He's a business leader, investor, philanthropist, and lifestyle activist, and he's known for his charismatic leadership style and influence. And we're going to talk about that today and how that applies to our own lives and our own roles as leader. He was named as one of the 10 most powerful people in residential real estate by the Swan Poll Power 200 in 2014. And since stepping down from his role as head of Keller Williams, he has used his platform and influence to actively serve and positively impact the lives of others. So he is still playing a very real leadership role in life and with his foundation and other projects that he's working on, and we'll let him share a little bit about what he's up to. He was working on a co-working project for a little while, and that's how I met Mark. And Mark sent an email just kind of asking some questions about the co-working business model and how it worked, and I happened to answer it, came into the GWA account, and then Mark and I got introduced, and I spent a little time with you and was just really, really taken by, you know, kind of your sort of way of being and your leadership role, and also how, you know, willing you were to engage with folks. I remember I came down and came to an event that you were hosting and you were speaking at the event. And then you spent a couple of hours with me going through like a personality profile that you love to use at Keller. And I thought, this guy is so busy and he's so, you know, has a lot of ways, you know, to use, you know, your influence on a broader basis, and spent a couple of hours kind of helping me. And that was really impactful for me. So got to know Mark a little bit. And I've been thinking, you know, recently in particular, there are a lot of sort of crisis events that we've been managing through. And I think, so my audience is made up a lot of co-working operators and folks in real estate and people that may not have been sort of in a position of leadership where they've been referred to as a leader and yet are all of a sudden kind of called upon to be more of a leader. And Mark, we were just doing a pre-chat and you were kind of talking about the critical, you know, roles that leaders play and how that's reflected in our business. So I thought of Mark and thought, you know, I would love to hear Mark's perspective on, you know, leadership in general, but during this time, and to help us really think about our roles as leaders and how we might further develop that and kind of really kind of grow into that more where it's becoming even more necessary. So thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Jamie. I'm delighted to have an opportunity just to reconnect and to chat. And one of my favorite topics in the world is leadership. And I, I try to wake up every day with this one thought about what being a leader is. And I think that the real role of a leader is to earn the hearts and minds of the people they lead. And, you know, I have had so many great training experiences over the course of my career in real estate, my career after real estate. One of the great ones was I got to hang out with John Maxwell at his annual event, called Exchange several times. And you know, that's where you'd have like 60 or so business leaders all at a high level of leadership who would spend 3 days with John Maxwell and he would provide these experiences. And one day, one of the other people in the audience that was there said, "Well, John, what do you think is the role of a leader?" And he said, "Well, you know, a leader has got to do 3 things. And that is, number one, they have to demonstrate that they care first and foremost." So that's why I say, I believe the first role of a leader is to earn the hearts and earn the minds of the people you lead. Because until people know that you care about them personally and not for what you have to get out of that relationship, people won't give you the right to lead them. And so, and we could talk about that one point for the rest of the hour. What, how do you earn the hearts and minds of the people you lead? And yet, I think what matters most is that we are authentic and we are genuine and we put the other person ahead of ourselves. And I think anytime you are leading, if you are leading to push yourself up above other people, your leadership tenure will not be long-lived. It, really, the role of the leader is to lift people up, to take them to a higher place than where they are. If it's effective, positive leadership. Now, a leader could be negative or positive, right? So let's give it this context. A positive leader is to lift people up to a higher position in life than where they are. It's when you lift other people up, you're not actually failing to go higher yourself, but you may not always be going as high as they are. And you have to accept that.
Also an interesting perspective.
So, so three things. Let me hit the three things and then, okay. and then we can change gears however you want to. So the second thing is people, you've got to earn their trust. People won't let you, they will not give you the right to lead them authentically unless they trust you. And so showing that you trust means that you have to give first before you expect to receive. And I think a lot of people in leadership miss this. We give first without expectation of anything in return because it's the right thing to do because we care and we're trustworthy. And then the third thing is we have to actually be able to help the people that we're leading. So every follower is walking around saying, hey, do you really care about me genuinely? And how do I know I can trust you? Do I trust you? And can you even really help me? So in order to help someone, you have to know what they want. You can't lead people that say they want one thing simply because they're saying what they think you want to hear. You have to lead people by authentically understanding what matters to them and what's important. And then the real role of a leader is to give context. Once you've shown that you care, once you've earned their trust, and once you know what they want and you can help them, it's about bringing context. And I love getting to know people. I mean, you talked about how when you and I spent some time together, the first thing we did was I had you complete a behavioral profile. And by the way, the ABA is still one of my greatest tools for getting to know someone because it's like a customized process where you're really dealing with the person and what matters to them. I like using that instrument to get to know someone. Then I know whether I can help them and then I can answer whether or not I lead them. And we should probably talk about behavioral profiles and how they can help your co-working operators really understand the motivations of the people they serve and understand their behavior so then they can help them and use that as a tool to get to know them better and then help them get what they want. Because that's a powerful tool. Obviously I can keep talking about leadership. Yeah, I'm very passionate about it, in case you can't tell. I love it. And my whole life, I think what I've done is I've just led people, and I've led people with authenticity. And I don't say that in a bragging way. I just know that I have led them in a way where I really wanted to be able to help them. I really did care, and they really could trust me. And that creates such a meaningful relationship when you can get there with someone. It creates so much meaning.
Give me a little, dive in a little bit for me on the giving context.
Okay. Let's say you're asking someone to do something. Because often, as a leader, you're exhorting something out of someone. You're trying to bring something that powers them forward, and you're teaching them how to think in a way that they need to think, so they do what they need to do, so they get what they want to get, right? That's really what the definition of leadership is: teaching people how to think so they do what they need to do, so they get what they want to get. So when we talk about teaching people how to think, that starts with context. And so if I were going to lead you, I would want you to understand, why does this matter? Why is this behavior important? How have others used it successfully? Let me demonstrate and be a role model and lead by example. All of that is the process of giving context, which helps others see that they can actually do it too. People have to be able to see themselves doing something before they will do it. It's that first creation, second creation thing, right? So I always try to start with I start with earning their hearts and minds, because that's job one. And then beyond that, it's really, how can I help you think the way you need to think so that you can see this? So I can tell you, back in the Keller Williams days, every single class that we ever taught started with 6 business and personal perspectives, which perspective number one is self-mastery. In other words, you can't be a jack of all trades and navigate the road to massive success, because it's not a road that's wide. It's a narrow pathway that's well-defined. So self-mastery is the number one thing you have to understand. You have to master what you're being asked to do. Time management, the 80-20 principle. Understanding that 20% of what you do generates 80% of your outcomes. Even you take that so far that 20%, you wear 80% of the clothes you have, you wear 20% of the clothes you have 80% of the time. We taught that you got to use learning as the foundation for your action plan. We taught that you've got to move from what you do naturally to following systems, models, role models, and then business models, and truly like bringing those disciplines into your life. We taught that you've got to unlimit your limiting beliefs. We taught that you want to be accountable as a human being, not a victim. So we always brought context to the lesson on the front end. And that context is meaningful in helping people know how to think to navigate the pathway that they're on. And so I think once you earn the hearts and minds, now let's give context. Let's teach you how to think. And then, Jamie, beyond that, you have to remember, I said everything rises and falls on leadership. At the end of the day, this is where the rubber meets the road. The hardest person to lead is yourself. You know why?
Why?
Well, I think you know why. Because we judge other people by their actions. We judge ourselves by our intentions. Mm. And so if you really want to know yourself as a leader, don't watch what you say. Watch how you behave, and you will begin to really know yourself. And so what I would say to all of your co-working space leaders that you serve is for them not to watch what they say, but really pay attention to how they behave, what they do when no one's looking, how they think about the people that they lead. When no one is looking, do they speak good about them? Do they speak badly about them? Do they love them and appreciate them? Do they resent them because they're having to give at a time when they don't feel like they have the, you know, the fuel in their tank to give? You got to watch yourself when nobody's looking. That's how you'll know how effective you are as a leader. And you got to manage your time and your priorities effectively. And a lot of people, particularly in workspace environments, they waste your time. You can feel like they are. And then you have to know your own self so that you know, like, I know that I'm very social. So I know that I could waste time by being too social at a time when maybe being more focused and a little bit more intentional about how that focus gets aimed.
So I'm thinking about the things you're sharing in the context of, you know, managing through the pandemic and many of our businesses, you know, having to close, people not being allowed to leave their house and come to work, and having to manage teams through this. And, I'm just kind of putting some pieces together because I think we think of leadership and it feels vague. And I love that, you know, you've kind of got a little bit of a framework around it and starting with, you know, caring about your team and being authentic about that and earning their trust and actually being able to help them. And I think some of the things that are coming to mind for me, I tend to be very, this from my profile, but very like results driven, action oriented. Like I want to, you know, okay, here's what we're going to do.
5-1-5 graph. Remember it well.
So I tend to get into
the way that's a classic CEO graph.
Right.
I think I told you that in the beginning.
Totally. Right. So yeah. There's some good things, but some trade-offs. Cause I tend to be very like, all right, let's figure out what to do, you know? Mm-hmm. And you're saying like, look, you got to make sure the team knows you care. You know, you care about them as humans and care about what they're dealing with at home with, you know, homeschooling the kids and, you know, all the other challenges that everybody's facing right now. And, you know, with all the cultural challenges with diversity that we're going through and, you know, not knowing how that impacts our teams and, you know, the letting your team know that you're there for them as a person. I think sometimes, you know, we forget about that piece and we think of leadership as right, going straight for the numbers, going straight for the results. And being really focused right now. I think a lot of us are focused on how are we going to fill the spaces back up. You know, we're opening back up and it's well-intentioned in that we want to keep the team. You know, we want to keep everybody. We want to have everybody still employed. We want the business to survive. But those are some of the thoughts I'm having is, you know, make sure we're taking the time to be humans and make sure that, it, you know, it's part of its context.
Can I
interrupt something? Totally. Interrupt me.
Something, and I feel like I can sense that this is something that if I were one of your listeners right now, I would need to hear this. So maybe I'm saying this for my own self. More than anything else. Sometimes leadership is about making tough calls for the good of the all, even though it may not feel in the moment like it's earning anyone's heart or anyone's mind. But it is making the decisions that you have to structurally make to keep the business moving forward. What I find is that the people that are, and what you're saying about behavior, the people that are good at that often are not good at the people side. And leadership is both.
Yeah.
In other words, it's competence also. I don't mean to make it sound like it's all airy-fairy. It's competence. You got to know what the heck you're doing.
And be willing to make those hard decisions.
You've got to make the hard decisions.
But do it in the way that makes people know that you care, even though it's hard.
You can't let them think that you're doing it ruthlessly. You're doing it because it's what saves the business. You're doing it because it's the responsible thing to do. And those calls can be very tough because, you know, particularly more social people like me, I hate the takeaway. I hate to take anything away from somebody because I feel like that's like moving backwards. And so I have this little self-talk. This goes right back to the hardest person to lead is yourself, right? So then I have to give myself a little self-talk and say, no, you know what? This is about preserving what we have. This is a crisis. When you use a health analogy, the health of your business, let's just use this analogy, the health of a person who's literally having a heart attack, you'd call the ambulance, you'd have a 911, you would have every resource available to save that person's life, to keep that person well. That's what leading during crisis is about in a business. It's like you've got the ambulance there and you got the EMTs and you got the whole like diagnostic team saying, okay, this is what's wrong. Here's what we need to do. And often those are hard choices. And so we hide behind, okay, well, it's my position and I'm the leader. Screw that. People don't care a thing in the world about that. They want you to tell them, hey, we are in a crisis. I called the ambulance. I got EMTs here. I got technicians here. I am making a diagnosis for the health and the future of this business and the well-being of this business so I can continue to serve you. And I think that's the other side of leadership, right?
And I'm not sure entirely this is what you mean by context, but it's a little bit of, right, you got to let them know. I've called in, all, you know, I've done all the things. I've, you know, the EMT has done everything they can, and we still have to make these hard decisions.
I remember one meeting I had, Jamie. We were in a market crisis, and, you know, sometimes a leader has to bring a little drama, right? And so I just did this video of these ambulances coming in and coming to a stop in front of a building. And I said, okay, that's where we are right now.
Yep, right. Yep.
That's bringing context.
Yeah.
So this is not about you. This is about making tough decisions. And hopefully, in being this direct and this open and this authentic, you all will know that I'm showing you this first and foremost because I care. I think coronavirus, you know, in a way, has presented that crisis moment to all of us in such a way where it's like every EMT possible. We're in the ER right now, right?
Yeah.
Some of us.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Or we've been there, and hopefully, yeah. Although I think a lot of us are still there. I mean, the economy is a complete disaster. I think you have so much wealth in this area. I'm not sure where to start, but you have managed, you know, led through at this point. I mean, you made it through 2007, 2008. You were at Keller Williams at that time and kind
we
of
now. Grew. That's when we had our biggest, I mean, that's was our biggest period of growth we ever experienced. We had competitors that went from over 100,000 agents to 50,000 agents. And we went from 50,000 agents to 75,000 agents during that time period.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to hear you kind of talk about that too. Like, how do you as a leader sort of see the opportunity and make some bets on what's out there? And how do you bring people along with you to see what you see?
Okay, well, let me just say, I was blessed to work with really smart, good people. And no one succeeds alone. And so while I might say, you know, like I'm bragging that I had the ability to navigate through that tough period. I worked with an amazing team, and together we had the ability to navigate through that tough period. And I think this is where teamwork is so critically important, and building your circle of five. And this, you know, would be the first thing I would say is that at Keller Williams, you know, there was Gary Keller, Mo Anderson, Mary Tennant, and myself, and we were the Eagles. Literally, when the four of us got together, we just made harmony, and it was a beautiful thing. And it was all because we all wanted the same thing. None of us wanted something different from any other one of us, and we were the four people leading the company. And so what I would say is that you have to be with people you're aligned with. And that alignment of all wanting the same thing is what matters most. I had one of my consultants, in fact, the guy who brought me the AVA, Bain Hinion, said something to me when the market shifted in 2008, September 2008. He said, I think it was September 2008, wasn't it? It may have been 2007. I can't.
It
might have been September 2007. And I talked to him, and we were about to have Mega Camp in Austin, and that's our annual, we had two big events every year. We had our family reunion that was our convention, and then we had a September convention that was for our top producers, and we called it Mega Camp. And so we had Mega Camp coming, and literally, the day before Mega Camp, one year, the day before 9/11 happened. And then here we are, 6 years later. And the day before, this is when Bear Stearns and all, the huge collapse, right? And so I'm knowing that I've got to go give a keynote address to, several thousand people the next morning. Call every consultant I know, everyone who can bring me context.
Yeah.
Because a leader has to have leaders that bring him context, right?
Yeah. I love just that perspective of I may not have all the answers. I need, right.
Rarely did I have the answers, but if I did enough talking and, connecting with others, I could come up with answers. And so my friend and consultant, Bain Hinion, who owns corporate consulting in Charlottesville, Virginia, with his son, Brett. He's just a great guy. And I could talk about him, not to give a commercial, but he's just a dear friend. He's helped me so much. I owe a lot of my own success to him. He said, the thing that you have to understand about tough economic times is that that's not what takes companies down. He said, you want to know what takes a company down? A disjointed management team that doesn't want the same thing and is fighting amongst themselves during uncertain and tough economic periods. So companies, legendary companies, have fallen during the best of times because they had management teams that didn't want the same thing and were not aligned. And we have seen great companies actually get their biggest spurt of growth during tough times because they had a management team that was aligned, that was in sync, that wanted the same thing. So what I would say to all of, anyone who listens to this, who is a leader, is that the first job is to align yourself with the other leaders in your organization. And where you're not aligned, get the wrong people off the bus. Because I'm going to tell you, we're in tough times. That's going to bring out a lot of emotion. At the very minimum, we better all want the same thing, and we better all be going for the same outcome. Because no one is going to achieve anything meaningful by themselves ever. It just doesn't work out that way. That's not the way things work in life or in business. And if you think you got to be the smartest person, you're going to find out you're not one day. And that's going to be... you gotta be willing to put yourself second and have people that are smarter than you are. I don't think I'm the smartest guy, and yet I do know that I am not threatened by people who think or are smarter than I am. I'm lifted up by them.
Can you talk about the circle of five a little bit?
Yeah. So let me say this. Can I give some context here?
Totally.
Okay, good. So I studied the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership by John Maxwell many, many times. I've read it multiple times. I've gone to it as almost like a reference book. And, that book start, you know, the law that that book starts with is the law of the lid, which tells a story about McDonald, the McDonald's brothers and the McDonald's franchise and how they basically had opened 10 franchises, but the first 10 they opened and failed. And they did not know how to sell franchise. They did not know how to build a business model, but they sure didn't know how to turn a burger around quickly at a time when you couldn't get fast food. So in comes Ray Kroc, and he tells that story. But the law of the lid, I would say, is important for everyone to understand, because if your business is not performing and you're the one driving it forward, you could be the lid that is keeping it down. So until you understand that, the circle of five doesn't mean anything. You have to start there, and that can be a little bit tough, right? So now, having said that, I've focused on three laws from the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership during coronavirus, and I've been teaching this. And the first is the law of the inner circle. And I started actually sort of pruning my inner circle when coronavirus showed up. Because the people that it's like this. I've seen this over and over again. Jamie, you can take the five people you spend the most time with, your five closest friends, the five individuals that are in your life more frequently than anybody else. You can add their income up. You can divide it by five, and that's going to be within a couple of $1,000 a year of what you're earning right now. It works like that. At least for me, it has worked like that again and again and again. So either you got to have somebody who's way up there high and avoid the ones that are down low, and then, you know, you might have a little variety, which is kind of what I've done for years, because I like understanding all different walks of life. But I do think the five people you listen to the most have the most, you know, they're influencing you and what you say more than what you read or what anything else. That's the greatest influence on your life. The five people that are in your ear the very most cause you to do what you do, cause you to behave the way you behave, put ceilings on your possibilities, either high or low, based on how they think. Get around people that have earned the right to be in your circle of five, and get people out of your life that have not earned the right to be in your circle of five. Number one thing, this coronavirus opportunity is an opportunity to kind of weed your garden, so to speak. And it's an opportunity to create new meaningful relationships that can bear fruit. And so that was the first thing that I focused on. Let me look at my inner circle. Let me think about this. And let me think about what I want. Let me think about my own results and where I'm actually feeling like my results are less stellar than what I'm capable of, or what I want, or what I crave for my life. And you'll find the answer in the five people you hang out with the most. And you may have five in business. You might have five personally. And then you can distinguish the category of your life even. Because you might, if you have five great mentors and a great inner circle of five in business, but you don't have a great inner circle of five at home, your home life could be a wreck and your business life could be wonderful. Just every area of your life, look at that circle of five. And remember that will determine your trajectory more than any other thing about your life. That's a big wow.
It is a big wow.
People don't want to, they don't want to do that often because it's painful. It means, oh, I've got to hurt somebody's feelings. Oh, I've got to do, it doesn't mean that. It just means you just have to shuffle and rearrange a little bit. And no, there's no such thing in this life as permanent. life is fluid. It's almost like, you know, it's almost like it's a body of water. It's always moving.
Yep. Do you know what I always, I love humans and I care about humans and I probably have the same challenge you do with the takeaway. And I think, you know, I've been coached over time to frame it as, look, every decision, you know, is, don't make a decision because you're worried about, well, you can be worried about, but have faith that everyone's better off when everyone's doing what's right for them. Mm-hmm. So you know, rearranging your inner circle, maybe somebody gets less time with you, but maybe that's good for them because they get less time with someone else who needs to have an impact on their life. You know, you do what's right for you and the outcomes, you know, everybody has the opportunity to do what's right for them.
I have a business consultant give me some context on that. And it, you know, it's interesting how life works. I can tell you that, you know, when I retired from being the active CEO of Keller Williams and, you know, I had hit all my personal goals and, hadn't really set new personal goals. And I had freedom for the first time, really my entire life. I never had freedom. And I remember then feeling like I really didn't know what I wanted, because once I had freedom, I missed all the attachments that I
things
had that
they gave you meaning and purpose, right?
They gave me meaning and purpose. And I had to self-discover that my identity was not what I did. And it certainly wasn't what I had. It certainly wasn't what I had helped build. My identity was what I am inside. And that was such a great piece of context for me to get, but you could have told me that was going to happen and I wouldn't have even understood it. Going through it brought a different level of context. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I would definitely say that you know, we have to self-discover our way through life. But there are two other laws, and I think that these are actually, I'm going to deal with three, but one of them is my law.
Okay.
but I'll do another couple of John Maxwell laws. John Maxwell talks about the law of the picture. And, you know, the first thing we have to understand is that people do what people see. And so you've got all of these leaders of co-working organizations. Now, they may not have even thought of themselves as leaders. They might have just said, hey, I'm a business owner. And I own I'm a landlord, basically. And I have these tenants. And we all work together. Well, I think this is what you've been saying all along. They are leaders. And they have a responsibility to lead right now. And where that responsibility shows up during difficult times like right now is you have to show people what they need to do, how they're going to survive, what decisions have to be made. You have to lead by example, or your people aren't going to know what to do because they just can't see it. We've got to show people right now more than ever. So the law of the picture is alive and well. And we got to remember, people do what people see. We got to show them what it is that they can do that will bring meaning and value to their lives and help them survive this crisis, this pandemic. You know, I could get off on a tangent about equality and all the racial stuff that's been going on. I'm not going to do that, but I think we even have a responsibility as leaders to take a stand against anything that's not right, that's unfair. and to take a stand for fairness and equality among all. Gary Keller had a great saying at Keller Williams about our profit share program. He said, it's not that it is completely equal opportunity, but it's not going to be evenly distributed. Meaning that you have to earn the right through what you do. And that always brought great context. But showing people how they contribute, showing people what they need to do. And then the other law that I love, and this is just because I tend to be, I believe in people, and that is the law of victory. We have to make people see that they're going to be okay. That they're not going to falter simply because we've had a little pandemic, simply because we have an economic crisis. They're going to be okay. We're going to survive this. We have what it takes. We have the commitment. We have the resources. Where we don't have the resources, we will rearrange. We will be okay. And we are going to win in the end. We will be victorious. And I think that people need that encouragement right now. They need to know it's going to be okay. It will be okay. You know what? This is not life or death. I've experienced that, because you know that's why I have a foundation. And that's a whole, I have, you know, just you, to give a little context to what I'm talking about, about 19 months ago, my wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. She died 5 months later. And I literally, and she had a mammogram every single year for the 35 years we were married. And you just don't think of breast cancer as being that dangerous. I just have to tell you that this business situation is not like you got somebody who's on the operating table who's going to die. It's not like someone who has an irreversible disease that's not going to go away, that's going to one day kill them. We're going to be okay, and we keep going. The one mantra that I got, by the way, I hope this is okay, but you know, I got this mantra while my wife was really sick. One of my closest friends' daughters brought on Mother's Day, came and spent Mother's Day with us. So we had Mother's Day on Sunday. That was the 12th, and then on May the 14th, Tuesday, Cindy passed away. So 2 days later. And she, my friend's daughter, who is like my own daughter, shows up and she has this bracelet and it's got KFG on the inside of the bracelet. But it did, I'm giving you the initials, KFG. And that stands for keep effing going. But it wasn't effing. It's the real word. Now, I'm not going to say it because I'm not. I don't want to be quite that crude for this.
We'll keep the podcast clean, but
we'll keep it clean. But I think y'all can use your imagination. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
KFG, keep effing going. You know, that's sometimes the law of victory is just keep freaking going.
Yeah.
Mark, when you don't want to, keep going.
Yeah. But is it your perspective also that it's okay to believe that we can keep going without having all the answers?
You're never going to have all the answers.
And that's part of our role as leaders, right? To help people see that we will get through it, even if I can't tell you exactly how.
Well, I mean, one thing that's for certain is that the future is uncertain.
Always.
Now, we live life as though life is a certainty and death is an uncertainty. When in fact, life is an uncertainty and death is a certainty. So as you live your life, remember that your first responsibility is to yourself, not to anybody else. And the reason that is so that you do what you need to do So you can now help other people and have empathy along the way. That really helped people. But unless you are being responsible and true to yourself, you're not gonna really have the battery life to be able to help people. And I do think that there are times when we don't want to keep going, and that's usually when we have to keep going with the most like commitment and passion and drive.
We need the KFG bracelet.
KFG, baby.
Okay, so you gave us three of John Maxwell's laws. What's the Mark Willis law?
Law of self-talk.
Oh.
When you wake up in the morning, when you go to bed at night, when you're with your friends, when I think a lot of people compare themselves to others. I think a lot of people think that they don't have what it takes at times. Their self-talk says that. Really, honestly, the best experience I had the whole year of 2017 was I got to spend a day with Michael Singer. Michael Singer is the author of The Surrender Experiment and the book The Untethered Soul. And I'm sharing my favorite books list with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you can share that however you want to. Both of those books are on my favorite books list. So just getting the chance to hang out with this author that I really loved was a super special experience for me. But Michael Singer said to me, he said, watch out for the roommate in your head.
That little voice lives in there.
he brings this context, Jamie. He said, if you lived with somebody who talked to you the way that you talk to yourself, you would kick that person out of your house. And yet, what we do is we tell ourselves we're not worthy, we're not good enough.
And you'd like file an abuse claim if that was a real human. Yeah.
Like it's self-abuse. It's all screwed up. It's messed up. It's not right. Stop
such good
talking
framing.
To yourself and stop in a way that's negative and stop saying that everything's good or bad or right or wrong. Just deal with what is and stop having guilt over the past. All you have is right now. And you don't know what the F is going to happen tomorrow.
We just saw that for sure.
All we have is right now. Live in the now. Be the now.
I love that. Okay, so you've shared some of your rules. You've shared, so your book list, I have the book list. And Mark, I can't believe I've had your book list from when you spoke, which is now, I don't know, a year and a half ago or, whenever that was. I'm going to read the book list now. So I'll share it in the show notes. There will be a link to Mark's PDF of his favorite books. And a lot of these concepts are shared in there. So I'm on that. Besides the books, so, leadership is such an evolution, and I feel like it's a practice.
Yeah.
Because, we can let the roommate take over, and we can, I always get impatient, I'm like, why don't I know all these things? We're always served with new situations, like what just happened. Maybe some of us didn't realize we were leaders until now.
Right.
And then we have to lead through a hard time and taking a new stand and seeing that as an identity. What advice would you give to people to start kind of making that, a life practice of taking on that role and developing it?
Well, I would say the first thing is to understand yourself and what you want and what matters. And then try to narrow that as much as possible down to a definable role. Hopefully, all your people, I would say two things. If you've got followers that are saying, I'm doing something that doesn't matter to me, I don't know what's important to me, and I'm not enjoying this, which I'm sure there are people that are saying that right now. I would say that that awareness is a gift, but I would also say chances are they are serving people that are not lifting them up, and they are serving people that are whining and boring them and haven't really earned. I know this is true for me, that if I ever got bored at what I did, it's because I was surrounding myself with people that were boring me. I want you to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
I got bored doing what I was doing. I was surrounded by people that bored me. I was letting people that were boring me have the majority of my time.
Yep.
So that goes right back to the inner circle. I would say this is a really good opportunity to take inventory and determine how passionate are you about what you do. How much do your people matter to you? Do you understand what matters to you in terms of what's really, really important about your career future and your life? And are you in harmony with that? And what do you need to do to get in harmony with that? Because you can't lead authentically otherwise. And, you know, I actually believe that it's kind of like if you're doing something and you're not enjoying it and you say all the right things, people don't believe you. Have you ever met someone, for whatever reason, just when you met them, you just, I don't like them. I'll bet you the person that you were talking to knew you didn't like them.
Mm.
And I think that's why we have to be authentic about how we lead. We have to come. I know at Keller Williams and in everything that I've done, that the thing that has mattered to me the most was liking who I lead. Knowing what, I didn't have to love them, but caring about them, really, really important. And I believe that beyond that, what made me effective was I really understood that I wanted to build the largest real estate company in the world. So I was doing what mattered to me. I was literally doing what mattered to me. I think we have to be in harmony with what matters.
Yeah, and it's a time to really be reflective of that and be intentional. And I think you've shared, you know, some of that with your own life. It's like we go, 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 and then we're forced to stop, literally.
Well,
just like be with ourselves.
So it's about, really, it could be about managing our time more effectively too.
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, a lot of the things that you've talked about, the five circles, certainly, and how much that impacts and, you know, that's part of managing your time and who you spend it with and knowing ourselves.
Did you ever read Robert Ringer, Million Dollar Habits?
No, I don't think so.
Okay,
I do read a lot of, you know, business books. That's why I'm like, I can't believe I haven't read these books.
Most of them are old ones. Like, I love Thinking Grow Rich, but Million Dollar Habits. You know what the first habit that they say every millionaire has?
No, what?
The reality habit. They have a clear vision and understanding of their present reality.
Mm.
And I think that right now we have to know that somewhat realizing that our old way of operating ain't going to work anymore.
Yeah.
Our old way of doing business just ain't going to work anymore. Don't function in an unrealistic environment because you won't be effective.
Mark, I'm curious about sort of your schedule used to be like, go, 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 go. And you mentioned a lot of Zoom calls. How has that shifted for you? Sort of taking a moment to reflect and kind of refocus.
You know, I went through a period. It's interesting. So if I give a little context, when I left Keller Williams, I'd hit just about every goal that I'd ever set. I had hit all the financial goals and all the achievement goals that I ever set. And then I looked up and I thought, well, the mistake I made was not knowing what was next before I got there. And so I've had to go through a process. I actually have called the last several years, I read some Winston Churchill, and Winston Churchill talks about his years in the wilderness. I feel a little bit like I've been in my own wilderness for the last few years. And that, you know, that whole concept of years in the wilderness, I brought this because I wanted to share this, because this is one of the things. Winston Churchill, who himself spent about 10 years in political exile after World War I, wrote that every prophet has to come from civilization, but every prophet has to go into the wilderness.
Mm.
He must have a strong impression of a complex society and all that society has to give. And then he must serve periods of isolation and meditation. This is the process by which psychic dynamite is made.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation from him for so long ago, before people, you know, I don't know, necessarily thought that way. That's really interesting. I am reading a book about Winston Churchill. I haven't gotten to the wilderness part yet.
It's so good. But what people don't know is that had he not had his years in the wilderness, he wouldn't have been prepared to take on Hitler and World War II and lead Britain and the Western world out of the most awful war we've experienced, that brought literally the Cold War dynamic to the table. Winston Churchill, along with FDR, was the guy who ushered us out of that. And it's why we're okay today.
Yeah.
So it's okay to go into your wilderness. So you asked me, I had my years in the wilderness, and I feel like my psychic dynamite's been made, and I'm ready to serve at a high level. So if people ask me to Zoom, I Zoom. And, you know, I prefer in person, and yet I feel like I've had my psychic dynamite kind of made, and I'm ready to serve all over again. And it's been great for me.
Good. I love it. Well, thank you for joining me today. Anything you wanted to cover that we missed?
Well, I would just say this. Anyone who's listening who wants to understand more about our foundation should go to willisfamilyfoundation.org. The whole story is there, and it, you know, you can just read it from start to finish. You can find out about our foundation. It's for the research and advancement of cancer detecting canines, which offer the greatest hope for early cancer detection. And I would just say that we've got a startup foundation, and I appreciate all the awareness that we can create. So if I can use this as a plug to create awareness about that foundation, that'd be great. I hope that I get to do this again with you sometime soon. I've loved it, and it's been an honor and a pleasure, and thank you so much for giving me this opportunity and for us to have this opportunity to reconnect.
Well, Mark, the feeling's mutual. Thank you so much for taking the time and for sharing your perspective. I have a great deal of respect for your leadership capabilities and your history. And, you know, some of that comes with, you know, time in the trenches, and have loved to learn anything that we can from that. And we will link to the Willis Family Foundation info in the show notes for anybody who's interested, and other links of Mark's if you want to learn more. Thank you again.
Terrific. I've enjoyed it so much. Thank you, Jamie. Great to reconnect.